This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 6th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 150. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, the Is It Just Me commentary, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The big deal feature, the BC Greens, who have the balance of power in the BC legislature, are choosing a new leader. Hear from contestants Cam Brewer, Kim Darwin, and Sonia Furstenow. And I'll award a virtual Nanaimo bar to those making a difference. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or was that a bizarre summer, the summer of COVID-19? Riots and looting and protests in the excited states as the battle of two old men heats up. Trump versus Biden on a screen near you while MAGA fights Antifa. Meteorological summer is over. To weathermen and weatherwomen, it's now fall. Fear not, there are 2 weeks left until the autumn equinox. What will happen by then? A snap British Columbia election is more likely than a snap federal election. Premier John Horgan and his hubris horde think the second half of October is a good time to get a majority, even though coronavirus cases in British Columbia will keep rising and parents and students and teachers are petrified they'll get sick in the classroom. But don't worry, say Health Minister Adrian Dix and Dr. Bonnie Henry, they can stand 1 meter apart. 2 meters isn't needed anymore, they say. Oh, and the ban on gatherings of 50 or more people? Well, students can get together at high schools with as many as 120 classmates in the same gym. So talk about mixed messages and confusion. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In Apple Daily, Inner Mongolian female official fell from a building and her husband was sealed by the state security. Pressure to protect Mongolian language. Su Rina, 33, fell to her death September 4th at her residence. The police alleged that she suffered from depression. However, a suicide note showed that Su Rina's death was related to the recent Mongolian protection of the Mongolian language. In Inner Mongolia, protests by Mongolian farmers and herdsmen have recently erupted against the authorities' push for Chinese language teaching. In the past week, there have been reports of many people falling to their deaths in a strange way during protests, but the authorities blocked the news, and even the names and background information of the deceased were not known. Christian Silva in ABC News Australia. Mistakes in shambolic hotel quarantine program laid bare after 3 weeks of evidence and inquiry. The estimated cost of the program was set to reach $130.5 million by the end of June, about $24.2 million over budget. At the Stanford Hotel, guards who tested positive carpooled to work. Several colleagues who worked on the same floor later contracted COVID-19. Up to 70 guards were not socially distancing while gathering in a meeting room. In another incident, a guard was sacked after slipping a note under the door of a female returned traveler that said, quote, "Hey, hun, add me on Snapchat," end quote. Osamu Sukumori in the Japan Times, telework forces a rethink of working and living in Tokyo. The population in the Tokyo metropolitan area saw a negative change in July for the first time since at least July 2013, Internal Affairs and Communications Ministry data showed. Property preferences are also shifting, with homes in areas further away from their nearest train stations drawing more attention. Some companies, like digital marketing firm Overflow Incorporated, even decided to get rid of their Tokyo offices altogether to save costs. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. James Crepea in the Oregonian, Governor Kate Brown, I know many of you love going to Autzen Stadium and watching our Oregon Ducks kick the Washington Huskies. College football isn't happening in the Pac-12 this fall, and when the sport will return to Oregon remains unclear. Oregon State Health Officer Dr. Dean Seidlinger said the state expected increased transmission of COVID-19 in the spring and summer, particularly around holiday weekends, but it was higher than we had hoped, even as the state's statistics still compare favorably nationally. Bob Condotta in the Seattle Times, Seahawks to wear helmet decals honoring victims of racism and police brutality. Specific phrases that players and coaches will display include Black Lives Matter and racism, It Takes All of Us, and Stop Hate. The team will also wear shirts during pregame warmups that read, We Want Justice, an effort organized by veteran linebacker K.J. Wright. April Lawrence on Czech News, We were very shocked. Businesses react to Victoria Council plan to reopen Centennial Park for camping. When council voted to look at tearing the fences at Centennial Square back down and allowing camping once again, the reaction was fierce among some members of the business community and the public. Even Victoria's mayor, Lisa Helps, voted against the idea. She's perplexed. The closure of the camp followed weeks of crime and violence in the square, including two stabbings and a drug trafficking operation that now has 17 people facing charges. And these headlines this week in the Breaker.News. Judge chooses not to intervene in sale of Richmond waterfront land near a casino. On International Overdose Awareness Day, pondering the grim numbers of BC's other public health emergency. NDP cabinet members still get bonuses despite racking up a $321 million deficit. Read the stories behind the headlines. Go to thebreaker.news. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. The BC Greens, the third party in the BC legislature, are voting on a new leader. Three people are running in the September 5th to 13th election to succeed Andrew Weaver. Weaver led the party to its best result in 2017, winning three ridings and almost 17% of the popular vote. After the closest election in recent BC history, the Greens supported John Horgan's NDP over Christy Clark and the BC Liberals in the historic Confidence and Supply Agreement. Weaver resigned as leader last year and left the caucus earlier this year to care for his ill wife. Weaver continues to vote with the Greens on keeping the NDP in power. Vying for leadership are Cam Brewer, an East Vancouver resident, First Nations lawyer with North Vancouver's Radcliffe and Company, and an environmental law teacher at Simon Fraser University. Kim Darwin, a Sunshine Coast entrepreneur who ran for the Greens in the 2017 election. Darwin became the party's vice chair in 2019. And Sonia Furstenow, the 2017 elected Cowichan Valley MLA, who rose to prominence when she led the Shawnigan Residents Association campaign against a landfill that threatened their drinking water. Last week, I interviewed Brewer, Darwin, and Furstenow. I asked them to answer common questions and then a question unique to their campaign or their personal background. I present them in alphabetical order and then reverse alphabetical order. Some responses have been edited, but only for brevity. First, why do you want to lead a political party? Cam Brewer.
Well, Bob, for 30 years, I've been bringing people together to create environmental solutions that also provide economic opportunities. And in every stage over those 30 years, I've tried to be the most effective I can be and contribute in the most meaningful way. At this point in my career, having been an entrepreneur, an accountant, a community organizer, a lawyer, a professor, an author, I can combine all those skills and experiences into the political arena and lead the Green Party, which I believe is in the best position to continue to offer those solutions and to lead the province into the 21st century.
Kim Darwin.
You know, we saw our greatest gains in 2017 under the leadership of Andrew Weaver. I met Andrew Weaver in 2014 at an event, and it was his pragmatism and his passion that led me to join the party in a leadership role. I became elected to provincial council in 2014, and we need to continue the direction that Andrew Weaver started us on. And being an entrepreneur and having been part of the party since 2014, I believe I'm the best leader in order to continue us forward.
Sonia, first to now.
And now I've been in the legislature for 3 years and learned a great deal about our BC legislature and BC politics. And I think that I want to build on some of the things that we've accomplished. We have accomplished some transformative change and some culture change, but there's a long ways to go. And I think that in order to achieve real change in politics, we need different kinds of leadership. And I'm not, I would say, the typical model of a political leader, a party leader, but that the leadership that I have embraced and kind of followed for the last better part of the last decade is an inclusive leadership. It's a leadership that brings people in and has people work on projects and causes and work together towards a common outcome and a common purpose.
Former leader Andrew Weaver has said that the Greens are too focused on southern Vancouver Island and they need to have a bigger presence in the lower mainland to become a truly provincial party. What do you think? Sonia, first now.
We have leadership. We have Green elected leadership on the mainland, and we are going to absolutely build on the incredible work that the elected Greens have been doing on the lower mainland. And so it's not accurate to say that we don't have Greens in the lower mainland. Of course we do. We also have Squamish got elected Greens. Nelson has an elected Green. And this is what, if you look at the trajectory of the Greens over the last decade, there is exponential growth in the number of people who've been elected. And so I think that, of course, we're going to build on those successes. I've been building those relationships from day one, but not just in the lower mainland, all across the province.
Kim Darwin.
I agree 100%. So last year, in fact, on August 16th, 2019, Andrew was touring the Sunshine Coast. Our riding association put out several events for him. He took me aside and he asked me to run as leader of the party. Of course, I thought I was going to have 3 to 4 years to put a team together. But his reasons for doing that, again, are because he saw where our gains were in 2017. And he identified me as a person who could further the party along the lines to which he started. Now, I'm on the Sunshine Coast. Technically, we are considered part of the mainland. I have two daughters who live in Vancouver. So I have a room to stay, and I'm ready to hit the ground running on September 14th if I am elected as the leader.
Cam Brewer.
Well, I agree. We need to move beyond the success under Andrew's leadership in Southern Vancouver Island and expand into the lower mainland and across the rest of the province. Now, I live in Vancouver, work in Metro Vancouver, would run in Metro Vancouver, and I agree it's incredibly important for the party to have a foothold and a presence in the lower mainland. The other thing that the party needs to do going into the next election is attract the best candidates from all across the province, people who represent the diversity in the province, from geographic regions across the province, and have the skills and the experience to really strengthen the party. This province is filled with amazing people, and they should be running for the Green Party. So we need a leader who can attract that breadth of experience and expertise to the party as strong candidates for the next election.
The Greens have supported the NDP minority government under the Confidence and Supply Agreement. BC has had a stable government since 2017, but the NDP is seriously considering an election this fall. On the first day as leader, you would have to speak with Premier Horgan. What would you say to him? Cam Brewer.
Well, what I'd say to Mr. Horgan about an early election this fall is that the time is not right for the province. The people are already concerned with COVID. The numbers are going up, concerned with the economic fallout from that. We've got high unemployment, 11% in July, 29% among young people. Families are concerned that kids are going back to school in a couple weeks. Are they going to be safe? Are we doing the right thing? Are we spending enough on education and in the right ways? So people don't want to be distracted in these uncertain times from an unnecessary election just so the NDP can seize the moment and hope to gain more seats. What I would say to him is that instead, we need to be able to work collaboratively and have stability in the province. Now, the CASA agreement, the Confidence and Supply Agreement, as you mentioned, runs until the next election, and we would continue with that agreement, but not unequivocally. If things started to happen that are contrary to the Green values, then as leader we would stand up to protect those Green values. But otherwise, there's certainly no need for an early election, and I would advise the Premier against doing that.
Kim Darwin.
I would love to have that conversation with John Horgan. I would find it absolutely mind-boggling if the BC NDP call a snap election unnecessarily this fall, right when kids have gone back to school, when British Columbians are going to be worried not only about their physical health, but their financial health. There's absolutely no reason to call an election. The election is scheduled for, I think it's October 16, 2021. So having that conversation with John Horgan would be, you're right, one of the first things that I would be doing. The Confidence and Supply Agreement was one of the first minority government agreements that we saw in British Columbia in 2017. And it was based on a model from New Zealand. And it has worked brilliantly. It is a real democratic tool that has worked really well for British Columbians. So if I had the opportunity to continue under the Confidence and Supply Agreement for another year and a bit, I would do so. It is a better form of government than having majority governments, which I would say if the BC NDP do call a snap election, their only reason for doing so is to have a majority government, which to me is not as democratic or as good a representation for British Columbians.
Sonia, first now.
I would say to him what I've been saying publicly, which is it's in the midst of a pandemic, as we see the numbers rising steadily in British Columbia, and as we're grappling with a back-to-school plan that has created a lot of anxiety and stress for families and teachers and children, it's irresponsible at a time when there's no need for an election. The budget was passed. The three parties came together in March at the beginning of COVID and demonstrated that we were all capable and importantly recognized our responsibility to rise above partisanship in the face of a pandemic and work together. And we did that. And we achieved, you know, a historic session, a hybrid session. The NDP were given in one day session a $5 billion increase to their budget on March 23rd. And so to suggest that it's time to go to an election in the middle of a pandemic when you have evidence in the BC legislature of parties rising above partisanship because we need to in the face of a global pandemic is highly irresponsible. And putting partisanship ahead of the health and well-being and safety of the citizens of British Columbia in a time like this is, you know, it's beyond irresponsible. And that's what I will say. I've been saying it publicly. I'll say it to him directly. And if he says, well, we want out of CASA, we aren't sitting in the legislature right now, right? Bring the legislature back. Mm-hmm. Test the confidence.
And now for the unique questions tailored to each candidate. And Sonia, first now, you're the Green House Leader, a member of the Legislative Assembly Management Committee. After Speaker Daryl Plekis and his Chief of Staff Alan Mullen exposed corruption, the House Leaders let ex-clerk Craig James off the hook. He retired with a pension and didn't have to pay back a dollar of what he took from taxpayers. Why?
In terms of Craig James, you know, one of the things is you can't prevent somebody from retiring. If they say, I'm retired, you can't say, no, you can't retire. We're going to fire you, right? People are allowed to retire. And in terms of the pension, you know, there is an RCMP investigation that hasn't been resolved. But I think it would be an issue to say, well, you know, In the Canadian legal system, you're innocent until proven guilty, but we as an institution are going to deem you guilty and take away your pension. Now, I totally understand, like, the salaries and the ways in which those salaries were inflated, and we've put in policies now, so that can never happen again. We've put in very strict oversight of finances. The current clerk was the first clerk in BC to be hired by an all-party committee and hired with unanimous agreement. And so one of the things is we can look at what happened in that situation and say, how do we make sure that never happens again? It's not unlike, for me, professional reliance, right? What a mess we inherited. And we had to navigate that using legal advice. Obviously, none of us are experts on employment law, and putting ultimately, from the point of view of all three of us, the well-being and long-term health of the institution of the Legislative Assembly at the center of our decisions.
I also asked First Now about a report to Lamsey by Mullen that recommended major cost savings by defunding the Legislative Assembly's police force and replacing it with a security department. The report was leaked to the media, but never tabled at an open Lamsey meeting.
The Legislative Assembly Protection Services are currently in negotiations around forming an association, and of course, when there's negotiations between employers and employees, those are delicate. They have to be respected, just like any negotiations in any sector. And I can assure you that LAMSI has taken that report and read it and taken it seriously, and has struck a subcommittee to work on the Legislative Assembly Protection Services piece.
For Kim Darwin, you don't have a traditional leadership platform, but seven policy themes. With a potential election on the horizon, would you be unprepared as leader?
So we do have a platform that we ran on in 2017, and we are a grassroots organization. That's what makes us different. We are actually registered as a society where the members always have a say in the direction of the party. So we're not a typical party where you have this top-down leader saying we're doing this. But what I did do is I put out a series of seven top priorities that I would have, most to do with the economic transition of British Columbia to clean energy, renewable energy, to a just economy. So in Canada and Australia are one of the only two first world countries that predominantly rely on resource extraction. That is not a healthy economy, especially when all the other countries are transitioning. British Columbia has a golden opportunity to lead in the transition of our economy, and I believe that the BC Green Party is the party to effect that change.
For Cam Brewer, Tsawwassen and Sechelt have treaties, and a few others are getting closer to self-government, but the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh nations remain in the Indian Act after taking Olympic opportunities and then making deals with real estate developers over the years. Treaties were supposed to address historical injustice. As a specialist in First Nations law, how would you help the treaty process get moving again?
Well, so as you've pointed out, every nation is in a different situation, and it reflects the fact, too, that for thousands of years, there's been a wide range of Indigenous people living in this province and a plurality of societies and legal systems. A core part of what I've been talking about during this campaign is the revitalization of Indigenous law. There were existing legal systems here in what we now call British Columbia. Those legal systems didn't go away. There's an opportunity with the work done by Val Napoleon and her clinic at the University of Victoria and others to revitalize those Indigenous legal systems, to allow Indigenous people to say, this is what our legal system looks like today. And that then creates an opportunity for a conversation that recognizes the context in the province of plurality of societies and legal systems, and that will lead to a lasting justice and peace. And that will, as you say, lift up Indigenous people. And of course, related to this is ensuring that Indigenous economies prosper. So Indigenous-owned enterprises, Indigenous land management, Indigenous involvement in the innovation and the movement towards the opportunities in a zero-carbon future.
That was Cam Brewer, Kim Darwin, and Sonia Firstnow, the three contestants for the BC Green Party leadership. More information at cambrewer.ca, kimdarwin.ca, and soniafirstnow.ca. That's FURSTENAU. Voting continues until September 13th. The winner will be announced September 14th. For more information, go to bcgreens.ca and watch for the Breakers coverage of the leadership announcement.
When your face is gone, you won't stand alone. We'll all stand together, cause this is our home. And it don't matter what color you are, cause love will conquer hate. So you won't stand alone, you won't stand alone.
virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to a person or a group that is making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the men and women in organized labor who will celebrate Labor Day on September 7th. We can thank unions for 8-hour workdays, minimum wages, statutory holidays, and workplace health and safety laws. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 6th, 2020, edition number 150. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on September 6th in 1972, the Munich Massacre, 9 Israeli athletes and a German policeman killed by the Palestinian Black September terrorists at the Munich Olympics? Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. P-A-T-R-E-O-N.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.